I always feel the pressure to find the perfect gift for my relatives. In this case, whether you're sending an unforgettable gift or treating yourself to everyday perfection, Omaha Steaks delivers the world's best steak experience. For me, I'm not just into steaks. I like all types of meat. That's why I'll usually get the Winter's Bestseller Pack. It comes with juicy fillets, chicken breast, pork chops, and even burgers. Omaha Steaks offers unrivaled quality and variety, and every bite is backed by their 100% guarantee. A family-owned company with over 100 years of experience in the meat industry. Save big on unforgettable gifts with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide and earn an extra 20% off select favorites during their cyber sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code YUM at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code YUM at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. Go to omahasteaks.com to get 50% off site-wide plus an extra 20% off select favorites and more limited-time deals during their cyber sale. And use promo code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details. A big thanks to our advertiser, Omaha Steaks.
With the state of today's economy, it is more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made of the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back into your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality made to last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
I'm Dan.
And I'm Alex, and welcome back to On Air with Dan and Alex. You can find us wherever you find your podcasts, including Apple, Spotify, and beyond. Today, Dan and I decided that we are going to discuss at length the latest with the Air India 787 investigation that is dominating headlines around the world, not least because of key disagreements between an Indian-led delegation investigation and a US-led delegation investigation. There are all kinds of accusations of a cover-up. There are consequences that will be far and wide. And Dan, we decided, didn't we, that this is definitely worthy of our time to look into this a little deeper and to hopefully gain some perspective as to where we are and why this matters.
Precisely, and especially because this happened during our summer break on June 12th. We all saw this horrible, horrific, horrifying video as an Air India 787 just starts falling out of the sky. And it's one of those things where we all saw it and just went, how is this possible? What is happening? And of course, things pretty quickly turned toward indicating that there was something wrong with the engines. We didn't know what at first, but ultimately this incident led to a tragic 250 deaths, or even more than that, considering the people on the ground that also died, with one survivor walking away from the scene. So at first, everyone was basically turning to him, to obviously this poor, traumatized individual. What happened? What did you hear? What did you see? When ultimately what we found out is that indeed both engines lost thrust. What we found out quite shortly after was that not only did the engines lose thrust, but the fuel control switches sending fuel to the engines were moved from the run setting, so where fuel is being sent to the engines, making them work, to cut off seconds after takeoff, which is ultimately what caused this incident. So, you know, you want to tell us more?
Well, the as you say, that key part, that the important part of the fact that the fuel switches moving from the run position to the cutoff position is really at the center of what has become almost an international scandal right now. And I say scandal in the lack of clarity, truth, transparency, and also the lack of alignment that is necessary in aviation for us to be able to learn from something that has happened, to be able to learn from mistakes. Just look no further than over the last week, we had that very sudden out of the blue statement from Airbus, who had discovered that there could have been a problem that could reoccur on other A320 aircraft linked with solar radiation. And it said that they put out this emergency directive, didn't they? Grounding effectively the A320 until these software updates in most scenarios were done, promising it would only take 1 or 2 hours, but there would be, of course, and some instant disruption, which there was, kept very minimal. But this is the perfect example of manufacturers discovering something and then immediately taking that action in a real preventative way. But it's those preventative measures that keep air travel incredibly safe and the safest form of transport, as Dan and I discuss often. So to go back to Air India, and of course this was a flight that was supposed to be bound to London Gatwick, the aircraft in the videos, as I'm sure many of you guys, the listeners, have seen, because these videos went everywhere, descended uncontrollably and impacted into that residential zone near to the airport. It had been responsible for the unfortunate killing of so many on the ground as well. Some were students, some were junior doctors. The key technical detail that I think we'll discuss is that, Dan, you and I are both familiar with the 787 Dreamliner, and also we have both spent quite a bit of time in the flight deck, in the cockpit of the 787, on the ground, of course. Have you ever flown in the cockpit of the Dreamliner whilst airborne?
No, I haven't flown in it whilst airborne or on the ground. I visited.
Oh, you haven't.
It,
you visited. On the ground.
There's
that's
no
what
such
I meant,
thing as flying it on the ground. I was just kidding.
Yeah. Did I phrase that incorrectly?
Yes, yeah.
I think I did. Okay. If you were visiting the flight deck on the ground. So, because I can remember being, so we've been at air shows where we've been in the flight deck, of course, but also different events where airlines are exhibiting their 787. When you and I were in Seoul, we were on the 787 at that event. But anyway, both you and I are familiar with the Dreamliner and what it looks like, the flight deck. It's incredibly modern. It is Boeing's state-of-the-art jet. It's a much more futuristic and almost much more Airbus-looking flight deck and cockpit that compared with the other Boeing variants and Boeing models. The fuel control switches are guarded, meaning that they cannot simply be kind of brushed over and accidentally triggered. They require a physical, deliberate movement. And that's understandably the case so that they can't be triggered by things like turbulence or a vibration, or perhaps when one member of the flight crew is leaning over to get something, then accidentally, as I said, brushes past. It's a very deliberate physical movement that almost has you take hold of the switch and pull it out, lift it up, and you can feel, and it is I found this very difficult to describe apart from when you experience it and then people, okay, you can feel the resistance and you can feel the force that is required to be able to lift that up and put it up into the middle position or into the from run to cut off. And this single detail as to the physical deliberate movement requirement on those fuel cutoff switches is why the crash has triggered such international scrutiny. Sorry.
Yeah. And obviously this leads to a lot of questions. Is Boeing to blame? Is the design somehow to blame? Meaning, is this a US issue, Boeing being a US company, or are the pilots to blame? Because ultimately the design makes it impossible, supposedly, to hit these fuel switches by accident. So a lot of signs suddenly point toward one of the pilots have to have pushed these switches. So then the question is, why did they do that? Was there a problem with the engines? Well, the audio recording from the cockpit indicated that might not be the case. So this is sort of the core of the clash between US investigators who are sent to investigate when any incident involves a Boeing aircraft and Indian investigators in this case. What's the contention here? What is the US arguing?
Well, this is where, as we say, the de-alignment becomes clear. So the US investigators have signaled carefully, but quite clearly, that they believe that the fuel cutoff switch movement appears deliberate. They say that the cockpit voice recorder and the flight data recorder, which of course commonly referred to as the black boxes, suggest that there was no mechanical failure on board this 787. Now, when you and I first saw that horrific footage along with the rest of the world, not only have we not seen anything like that and of that severity in modern day, you know, recent aviation history, but also to affect the Dreamliner, which is a young aircraft on the whole, and to have happened in 2025, where we, as we say, aviation kind of elevates as an industry each year to ensure safety standards. We found it quite shocking and scary to even begin to think that the 787 could have had a mechanical failure that could have led to something as catastrophic as that, didn't we?
100%. I mean, let's also remember this was the first wide body fatal crash like this, a full on hull loss in a long time. So, you know, we always felt that the A350, the 787, these aircraft are the latest indestructible planes that everyone can feel safe flying. And now suddenly so much uncertainty was cast on that.
And so the US point of view is that they say that while the fuel cutoff switch movement appears deliberate, and while the black boxes suggest no mechanical failure, they believe that the cause was pilot induced, potentially intentional or grossly negligent. So they are carefully but clearly stating that they say that they can't explain the motive and they can't also specifically pin it in a malicious way, for example, on a member of the flight crew. But they say that their belief is that this was pilot induced. And they are also deeply concerned about, quote, how evidence was handled by Indian authorities, with the US National Transport Safety Bureau, who are the investigation bureau, the investigation arm of government, has said that they were supposedly prevented from photographing wreckage and that some debris was moved before the US had access, which would be incredibly unusual because, as Dan had touched on, involving a US manufactured aircraft, it becomes almost like a frozen crime scene where everything stays as it was, and you wait for the arriving team to come, and they position out almost immediately. They scramble together. They're on standby all the time, thankfully, for these very, very, very rare scenarios. And they head straight over to India, ready to be part of that investigation. And they go on the record as saying that by the time that they arrived, not only were they prevented from accessing different parts of the wreckage or from accessing key data that would be fundamental to that initial investigation, but that debris had already been moved before they had even been able to reach the main site of the crash. And therefore, they say that they have deep, grave concerns about how that evidence was handled by the Indian authorities and as to why it was not done in line with the international ICAO standard.
Precisely. Nice job there presenting the US perspective. So do you want me to share the Indian perspective?
Please.
So the Indian aircraft, let's see, the AAIB, the Aircraft Accident Investigation Bureau, has the following perspective, contra to the US. So they have not acknowledged or accepted that the fuel switch movements would be deliberate. So they acknowledge that there was a movement in the fuel switches, but they don't want to say that it was done on purpose, at least yet. So instead, they're insisting on, we need additional testing, I guess, on the 787, right? To see, is it possible for these switches to move if the pilots did not intend them to move? And potentially, this requires a redesign of the 787. The interesting thing here is that, of course, India has not grounded its 787. So this narrative they have that there might be a problem with the design of the 787 contradicts the actual actions of them continuing to operate the 787. So,
That's true.
Right. They, of course, as the country where the incident occurred, had the responsibility of analyzing the black boxes, which is where we get basically all the information in a crash to try to determine what happened. One of the points of contention here was that India had decided they wanted to send these black boxes to a tiny town of 6,000 people called Korwa in Uttar Pradesh, an Indian state. This state is home to a division of the government-owned Hindustan Aeronautics Limited. So it's a huge aerospace company in India. But this is a tiny rural town in one of the world's, or the world's, the most populous country in the world. They wanted to send the black boxes to a town of 6,000 people, where the Americans said, we would prefer to do this in Delhi, or even better, I guess, in their case, Washington, D.C., so that we can have equal access and transparency into what's going on with this data. Air India, or the Indian authorities who have now analyzed the black boxes, say they have no conclusive evidence of suicide or sabotage as of yet. So again, they're pointing to the fuel switch movement is not deliberate. And obviously there's a lot of delicate, this is a very delicate matter for the airline because, or for the country as a whole, because admitting that potentially one of the pilots caused this very high profile incident would of course be damaging to Air India's reputation, but also the country's reputation as a whole. At least the Indian authorities feel this, since Air India is a state-owned airline. There are obviously a lot of interests in maintaining some sort of positive image, although many would argue that Air India potentially does not have the best image as it is. It's what do you think there's that could be part of the motive?
Definitely, and that is what's playing a role here for sure. The problem is that when you involve politics or any form of, you know, of attempts to maybe preemptively cover up, so that doesn't mean that they have 100% knowledge of something and that they are hiding it, but perhaps they are fearful of what they may discover, and therefore they are trying to just keep a hold of that early narrative, which in turn is violating or flying against the industry norms of the ICAO standards of how these investigations are supposed to work, how we learn from it as an industry and what we declare. If you're going to be worried about what an investigation is going to throw up, that is not a healthy nor professional or even safe position to be in as the host country, the host government, the host airline of something so catastrophic. It's an unfortunate, rare incident that happened, and they have to be able to fully participate in a textbook investigation in order to ensure the safety of air travel everywhere. And as I say, if you're going to be worried about what it's going to throw up, that is not in the interests of global aviation safety. Then there are other factors at play there, which we have seen in many scenarios before and in many accidents historically, where the state are involved and the state are fearful as to how this might look reputation-wise. I would argue that these headlines about accusations of a cover-up are far more damning.
I agree. I 100% agree. So this brings us to sort of, if we were to summarize, what are the key friction points between the US and India here? Well, obviously, the access to evidence, because as you said, the NTSB claims that they were denied access to the crime, or not the crime scene, but to the scene of the accident, to see the evidence and to a proper investigation into the black box evidence. So the black boxes were not processed in the way that the US would have wished that they were. There are also different conclusions at the moment, because the US believes everything points toward human action being responsible, while India refuses to acknowledge that perspective. Then we have all the political sensitivity from the US side and from the Indian side, and trying to balance
political sensitivity, you've got, you know, a finding of pilot sabotage, for example, would devastate national pride and trust in Air India, and that's unfortunately playing a role here. It's not, we shouldn't be worried about the fragility of reputations, but rather we should be worried about and concerned about finding the truth. But with political sensitivity, that kind of finding would be incredibly damaging in the eyes of Air India. You've got India trying to protect itself as what they hope to be perceived over the next few years as a world-class aviation and aerospace power. We know about the significant, sizable orders that they've been placing across Indian carriers. They are going for growth. They are trying to cut out the stopover in the Gulf. And they have such a huge market and such a huge population that they are growing in such a way that they want to be able to tell the world, fly here directly, fly here nonstop, fly here on an Indian carrier. And of course, that also plays a role in this, in the optics of that. And you know, conversely, well, the US does not want blame placed on the 787 either, in the absence of any real evidence.
Mm-hmm. Completely correct. I think we should emphasize here that specifically the case of pilot suicide is always extremely sensitive, and there are still several incidents where we do not have a clear explanation as to what caused them. Namely, of course, Malaysia Airlines 370, which disappeared, and we don't have any concrete evidence there pointing to what happened. But I guess the running theory is that it was potentially caused by one of the pilots. There's similar situations with, yeah, I don't want to get in trouble with any countries, because I know that there's, you know, some countries that have been very against even talking about this. But there was an incident a few years ago where we saw a 737 completely nosedive, and there has been no investigation or international disclosure of what could have caused that, which again points toward pilot suicide. But the country where this happened is obviously completely covering that up and not ever seemingly going to disclose that that's the cause of it.
And as you say, this is something that has happened historically, not just recently, but over decades and decades, where states would interfere, sometimes knowing the actual outcome and thinking that that's something that needs to be covered up. Sometimes, as I say, almost preempting the outcome and thinking that they were worried about what would come up, and therefore they were restricting access and ruining the investigation. And none of that is in the interest of global air travel safety. And this is the problem where politics meets aviation, which we discuss on here. That meeting happens across the industry for so many different reasons. And once you have your eyes open to that, then you realize just how intertwined even the most private and profitable airline is with actually, you know, governments, be it the government of their home country or where they are flying to. So it all gets very messy. For Boeing, they say that, you know, of course, if India blames a mechanical or some kind of electrical failure, then that is India suggesting that there is a significant safety defect on the 787, which of course every other airline right now is not in agreement with. And that's also something to consider, which is that
precisely
when airlines are assessing what has happened in the immediate aftermath of something as horrific as this, they are not simply running to Boeing and taking Boeing's word for it that it's fine and then just continuing as normal. Look no further than the fallout of the 737 MAX crisis, where after it had happened in Ethiopia, the rest of the world banned the 737 MAX before Boeing did, before the US did, before they grounded it. It was the rest of the world that had realized that they had enough data to be able to say, we are incredibly worried, get these aircraft on the ground immediately. And we saw the likes of China, countries in across Asia, the Middle East, Europe. It almost worked its way around in time zones. I really remember that week that happened, before finally ending with the US under Trump at the time announcing it for Boeing, again, against all norms, because this is the weird world that we live in today. This was Trump's first term as president, announcing that they're going to get their 737 MAX grounded so they can figure out what happened. And of course, that was on the ground for ages. And it's now back up in the air following different upgrades. But my point here is that if other airlines were able to see any kind of concern, we would see especially the most cautious of airlines take action to ground these aircraft, whether Boeing were saying it was safe or not. And so Precisely. The fact that no other airline has done that is a pretty good sign in terms of the trust that the industry has in the 787, right?
Yeah. So as I said earlier, the fact that Indian airlines have not even needed to ground the 787, I think says quite a lot. Even if the Indian authorities are trying to blame it on a problem with the 787, the fact that they're not making airlines ground them, you know, that might hint to what they actually think. If we look at China as well, as you were hinting, they seem to be the most conservative when it comes to issues with Boeing aircraft and deciding whether that needs any investigation or not. They still have 787s operating at many Chinese carriers. And I think what you brought up about the 737 MAX is so illustrative of the core concern here, because clearly that taught us that the US as well is so motivated by the financial and business interests of Boeing that we can't completely trust them to be honest about the state of Boeing aircraft, because it took two deadly incidents and then the whole world grounding this aircraft before the US said, okay, we're going to do that as well. So we really have very strong opposing interests from India and the US, which is why, as we've been saying, we want to look at the players that are in the middle or are unrelated to this, and what are they doing to try to draw a conclusion about what might be the true cause here.
So 2 points on that. Firstly, I would hope that, and as you say, with the examples of the 737 MAX and all of the other countries moving before Boeing, and Boeing clearly having that vested interest to ignore what was the elephant in the room and then finally acknowledging it, I would hope that fast forward to today, we have a different, and this is not a hope, this is a fact, we have a different Boeing leadership team. We have different Boeing priorities. Everything that I'm hearing about the working and safety culture in Boeing, which is being directly led by the newer leadership team now, is positive, thankfully. And that was not the case just, let's say, a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. 2 years ago, people were still describing it to me as a complete shit show, and that they were unsurprised as to why the Boeing crisis was rolling on, because of the way in which they had prioritized numbers and the financial bottom line over safety. And don't take that from me, that was from Boeing themselves when they finally admitted that they were in such a deep hole that they were ultimately looking for a way to get out of, but the only way was going to be able to put aside that aggressive kind of, you know, endless quest for eternal Boeing economic growth, and actually realize that they have cut so many corners there that they had just been responsible for two horrendous accidents, taking away hundreds of lives from family members, loved ones and friends, and that could simply not continue. So I would hope that this time around, given that this is a tragic accident that happened in 2025, the same kind of aggressive, very, very capitalist driven Boeing isn't there, and instead is something that is much more paused, much more level-headed. And this is everything that I'm hearing about the leadership, and that the safety culture hopefully is going to really come forward and be the priority. So that's on that point on Boeing. Mm-hmm. The other point is, as you said, with the Indian carriers not even grounding the 787 themselves, you and I, and I think we're both in total agreement here, would be looking at the likes of British Airways, of Singapore Airlines. We would be looking for that, not just their first initial moves, but anything that they do over the coming weeks, maybe their own inspections, maybe their own partial groundings whenever the aircraft was for example, in between flights, and perhaps they're sending them into the MRO, which is like the aircraft maintenance workshop, for inspections. Maybe they were having their own conversations with Boeing. Maybe they were speaking on the record about their concerns. We would be looking at these carriers because we know them to be very, very cautious, and they're very cautious when it comes to risk, and they won't fly over airspace. Even if there had been a small geopolitical spat perhaps the night before, you see them straight away start rerouting, and that this is a good thing for air travel safety. But interestingly, as we know, there was no concern after that initial period where they had clearly seen enough to not doubt any other scenario other than this did not involve or was not the fault of the 787 Dreamliner.
Yeah. So that sort of begs the question I want to ask you. Do you think that we can trust these, like a national body, when there are business interests at stake, to regulate airlines? Or do you think there should be an objective international organization that goes into all these investigations to try to determine the cause without any bias?
Of course, in the best case scenario, you would hope that there would be that neutral international team that had no swing or bias to the country that it had taken place in, or the country of the airline that had the accident. But I almost feel that that could be impossible in 2025, not least because it doesn't exist. So that's not actually aviation policy to investigate an accident at the moment. There's no independent team, independent of every country, that then is distributed to the crash site to investigate. But also, how independent would an independent team be? That's also the problem, because mm-hmm. look at, for example, ICAO, okay, the International Civil Aviation Organization. They are the UN Special Agency for Aviation. Regular listeners of the podcast will know that I go there quite a lot, to their headquarters in Montreal. And they ultimately legislate and come up with aviation policymaking, laws, the freedom of the skies, and they govern the skies that we fly within. Even they have endless accusations of the fact that there are accusations that ICAO is bought by China. ICAO is lobbied to keep Taiwan out, which is true. Taiwan is still not a member state of ICAO, despite Taiwan themselves being somewhat of an aviation powerhouse in Asia. There are accusations of ICAO not standing up to Russia, for example, in clear violations there with MH17. And they've got actually a bit better at this, and it's become a bit clearer after some pushing from the Netherlands. But what I mean is that even the international body that doesn't investigate accidents but is involved and sets the standard as to how these investigations are supposed to go, even they themselves, you know, if I was to round up 10 people that knew ICAO, you know, five of them would say that they are not clearly independent enough to take on X, Y, Z. So that would be a problem. The second problem, of course, is that, as I said to you, the neutral international team doesn't exist. It's the manufacturer's team, so in this case, Boeing, and then where it happened, plus the nationality of the airline in this scenario, both India. And so in an ideal world, we would have, I guess, a team that is made up of different professionals and investigators around the world that are distributed. But then I guess, would you implement rules where, for example, if the accident, God forbid, happened in Switzerland, you could have no Swiss as part of the investigation team in that scenario for concerns that because they were Swiss, they would have a motive? And then are we not being ridiculous in suggesting that, that, for example, because Dan is half Swedish, he'll do everything in his power to protect the reputation of Sweden? I think the opposite is true.
In this case, yes.
It's not clear. It would seem petty. Yet that those same petty reasons of covering up the, you know, for example, the country where it happened, actually does happen in real life. So what do you do? It's a vicious circle.
Mm-hmm. I think that it's interesting to look at, if this had been an Airbus aircraft instead, would the reaction be the same? Because I even noticed my bias that because of everything that's happened, I have a higher level of trust toward Airbus doing what's right and trying to find, you know, the optimal solution that isn't only financially driven, although of course they are a financially driven company as well. But I think the whole world has this huge suspicion toward Boeing these days. And the first thing I saw on my social media after the incident was, of course, it's Boeing, another Boeing crash. Mm. That's immediately the narrative all these years after the 737 MAX incident. Don't you agree?
Yeah, and that was, as you say, that was the narrative that unfortunately Boeing had to face because of all those years of crises and the mess of the handling of the 737 MAX crisis, and then everything else with the safety culture, and then the whistleblowers, then the whistleblower that was found to have killed himself allegedly just before a key hearing, and all of this, you know, that then set up the perfect scenario for the world to take on this narrative that we don't actually care what happened. The fact that it's Boeing involved means that we are, quote, never going to fly Boeing again. And that narrative is really damaging, because people were even surprised, Dan, that you and I have spoken so much about the Boeing crisis, right? And also in my own capacity, I have broadcast across different TV networks endlessly about the difficulties that Boeing has faced, the congressional report findings, the when the leadership resigned, the new leadership coming in, the aftermath of the 737 MAX, the 787 Dreamliner issues, everything. And people confuse that in this almost like one size fits all way, that that means that Boeing are a bad manufacturer, or that means that Boeing aircraft are not safe. And of course, that's absolutely not the case. The Boeing aircraft in service today are safe. So people were coming to me after Air India, and they were saying, oh, you can't be surprised, can you? They were saying to me, it was a Boeing aircraft. Of course it happened. And I was saying, guys, this is not how you have to approach these things. This is entirely separate in almost all scenarios from the crisis that you are familiar with that became a household name and that was all over the news. Now, there is a world in which they might be linked, right? We might end up discovering that there is something wrong with the 787. And that's unlikely, I would say, at this point. But perhaps we do find out that there is something wrong. And perhaps that is also linked with the poor safety culture and the cost-cutting, corner-cutting, oversight, all of that, of the last decade. And that would be just as incredibly, unthinkably damaging for Boeing. But I think that is unlikely at this stage.
Mm-hmm. But let's also remember that even as recently as 2024, last year, we had the incident on Alaska Flight 1282 where the door blew out on a 737 MAX.
What a crazy incident that was.
Right. And that led to a new discovery of issues with the 737 MAX, where the doors on certain aircraft were installed incorrectly. So all of those had to be grounded and investigated. So I understand, you know, why this narrative is still so prevalent, because this was only 18 months before the Air India incident. So people are expecting on some timeline that, okay, we're going to discover new Boeing issues. And there needs to be a long period, I think, of no Boeing issues at all for people to regain trust, because
absolutely,
it's frequent enough that, of course, people go there in their mind.
And that's called, you know, we spoke about it before, that's called cut through, right? Where I think that this, the story of Boeing being involved in something incredibly negative in aviation definitely cut through to almost every household. Whether or not the association was correct, or they knew the actual story, or they knew why they perceived Boeing to be either unsafe or in crisis or so on, that never filters in fully into those households. But they had seen the name enough in the headlines to be able to conclude that perhaps that was an aircraft type that they should be avoiding. And how many messages did we get over the last year? You know, hi, am I flying a Boeing? They want to know, and they're sending flight details because they want to know so that they can change. And we're reassuring them, this is not how it is. You shouldn't conflate, you shouldn't link. These are isolated things and so on. But enough had happened, as you just touched on, to be able to cause what the public perceived to be a pattern. And once that is there, that's very difficult to unwind.
Very, very difficult. So final discussion on this topic is about, of course, pilot mental health. Again, there's not a consensus about what caused this incident. At this point, it seems like, will we ever get a consensus? It's unclear. But what can we, you know, just disregarding this as a whole, talking about pilot mental health, what can we do to ensure that pilots are only flying if they are of optimal mental health?
Yeah. Well, I think that this is, you know, I always say that I'm not worried about weather or about, you know, the things you see in the movies, but I'm far more worried or concerned about if my pilots are going through a divorce, or if they had a bad night on the sofa, or if they have stress at home with their kids and things, because at the end of the day, we are all humans and we all have those things that take a toll on the body and the mind. And mental health was almost taboo in aviation, because pilots, for example, were not coming forward to airlines to admit to them that perhaps their head was not in the right place. They were not feeling 100%. They were not feeling their reactions were fast enough, or their alert levels were there because of stresses with X, Y, or Z, knowing that it would probably get them terminated. And that is that's the problem there. Pilots must be fit, they must be stable, they must be predictable. And there is a common trait in so many pilots. There is almost a consistency in what they have, because you have to be the right kind of person to be able to be the commander of such a big machine with so many lives on board. But the problem is that when they come forward and say, I'm not okay, it could mean the loss of their medical license. It could mean that they're, you know, a mandatory grounding. Maybe they never fly again. You know, that means there's the worries of loss of income. There's the worries of the months that it would take to be recertified. So the system as it is now unintentionally incentivizes almost pilots to hide problems and to not disclose them. And that's incredibly concerning for the industry, because airlines go wrong when they rely on self-reporting, because that falls off of a cliff under stigma. Okay. Airlines go wrong when it comes to treating mental health as some kind of, it's a problem, rather than acknowledging that actually this affects all humans, regardless to their roles. And there is also these kind of outdated medical assumptions, especially, for example, in Asia or in South Asia, where disclosure can just mean career end.
Yeah, it's a concerning, I mean, the fact that there's not much positive to say about this is doesn't feel great, but hopefully just talking about it, placing more emphasis on it, will, you know, make things improve, because it's very, very important. as we say. So we have a ton of questions from you guys. Do you want to hop into Q&A, Alex?
Let's do it.
Let's start out here with a question from Marcel. He says, do you think that the European aviation air travel market might be shaken soon? I'm referring to the rise of aviation in Central and Eastern Europe. Airports like Riga and Athens expressing interest in expanding, but predominantly Poland building its new massive hub. The region has the fastest growing demand for air travel in Europe, with regional and international airports beating record after records. Also, the region's airlines strengthen, like Air Baltic and LOT, both opening new connections, and the second expressing interest in acquiring Smartwings. What do we think?
I think that we will see a shift in the dominance of the key players, especially in markets like Europe. I don't think that we will see a weakening of the big guys. So I don't think that we are going to be witnessing a weakening of, for example, the Lufthansa Group, Air France, KLM, IAG, and so on. But I think that the players that traditionally have been quieter or a little more in the background are ready to have their moment. And I think that that moment will be had, basically. And we want that as well. We advocate for that because it increases competition. And also, there are so many countries around the world that haven't yet had their airlines have not yet had the growth opportunities that others had, perhaps because they're not part of a group. But I have to tell you this, actually. This is linked to this. So I was at the weekend at a dinner, and the guy that was opposite me was introduced as a Lufthansa board member until 2014, he said. So it's been about 10 years since he left Lufthansa and he's retired. And I said to him, oh, so I can't blame things on you. And he said, well, you can blame the previous staff pre-2014. And I said to him, what do you think about what's happening now with Europe and with and this links with the question, and also where TAP Air Portugal should go? And he felt that there are so many airlines around the world in Asia and the Middle East that have unfair advantages. Now, this is a real kind of, this highlighted to me the era that he worked in Lufthansa, right? That TAP Air Portugal should, for example, be able to join Lufthansa Group. And there was no, competition worries that should be had and blah, blah, blah. Now, of course, you and I completely disagree with that. But I just thought it was really interesting that mentality definitely was there and is still there to some extent in the group.
Yeah, 100%. And it's like everyone says, as aviation in Europe grows, that's a good thing, but there's inevitably going to be consolidation. So although LOT will grow, Air Baltic will grow, for sure this will benefit the big airline groups in some ways because those will be attractive targets to snap up in an acquisition. And I think that's exactly what's going to happen. So these airline groups will continue to grow as aviation in Europe grows, but it won't exactly be an existential threat to them, in my opinion.
Of course. Yeah, I agree.
Praveen sends two questions here. One that's interesting because I remember reading about this faintly, but I'm glad he brought it to our attention again, that there's a new airport opening in Delhi, supposedly this month, but I don't know if that's going to happen. The new Noida, N-O-I-D-A airport. And the funny thing is that their airport code is going to be DXN. So he says awfully close to DXB. Wonder how that will turn out. And of course, that's one of those funny situations where we see over and over airport codes getting confused, people getting confused about where they're flying. Because I noticed that even if, you go to input Frankfurt, for example, as your destination when searching a flight, a lot of airlines will first populate some other city, or like the US airlines, if you put London, usually they'll put London, Ontario ahead of London, UK. So I wish there were statistics on how many people are booking flights to the wrong airports based on those types of searches. The real question he has here, though, is unrelated to that. He says, how is American Airlines navigating the love-love relationship it has with both Qatar and Etihad as they sell connecting itineraries on both? And, you know, that's an interesting situation because I would say my perspective is that American is a lot closer to Qatar than they are to Etihad. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's true. And of course, there are reasons for them to be closer. Not just the flight to Doha itself, but also the One World Alliance membership link. And they've strengthened that relationship with One World serving as the foundations to it. There is also the code sharing, the fact that they put each other's codes on flights. There's the agreements that they have with passenger sharing and all of this. So, yes, I think that they do manage it well, but I think that it's much, much stronger with the Qatari carrier than it is with the Emirati national airline Etihad.
Yeah, and that leaves Etihad in a bit of a tricky position because we obviously have Emirates very close to United these days. We have, as you said, Qatar closer to American. So that leaves Delta, but Delta is seemingly going to be close to Riyadh Air, an airline that isn't flying yet. So Etihad, another airline that's really looking to expand, is in a bit of a tricky situation here with a lack of any close partners. They have JetBlue at the moment, but JetBlue's future is uncertain. So we will see what happens to that. And again, you know, just going back to our discussion about US pre-clearance, Etihad is actually the best airline you can fly if you want to connect in the US, because you land and your bags are checked through, which never happens otherwise. If you have to clear US immigration, you have to collect your bags and recheck them.
That is so such a valid point. I don't think Etihad realized this. And I'm serious. How could they not have branded? How could they not have pushed this so that everyone knew that if you were flying to the US, for example, from Asia or from Africa, then at least if you do it with this airline, then it means that you're able to check your bags through, you arrive as a domestic passenger, you connect super easily. I wonder why they are not going, and I don't want to be repetitive because we did this last episode, but I do wonder why that is not part of the brand, because I know that if I was at the top there, that would be everything I would be pushing. I would be striking deals left, right, and center with US carriers, even the smallest ones that fly to Sitka in Alaska, and ensuring that people know that their bags go straight through, and also as the person they do as well, because you arrive as a domestic.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, that's the key point. It's one thing to fly direct to New York or something like that, like I did. But if you're connecting in the US, really, all passengers should be trying to fly Etihad. If you're going to a secondary city, Portland or Albany or anything, it makes
anyway,
no
we
sense
can't
to fly
spend
them.
But they don't have
the partners that they need. They don't have those close partnerships, which is the irony.
We're spending every episode saying, guys, I mean, you have to fly Etihad if you're going to the US. And even Etihad is not telling them that. So that is not our responsibility.
or through Ireland. Because, I mean,
I don't think anyone has ever recommended someone fly Aer Lingus. I'm sorry, Aer Lingus frequent flyers, but I think that is the reality. Dan had a horrendous experience the last time he flew Aer Lingus. It was nothing short of, I mean, I think you would have been warmly welcomed in North Korea versus what you experienced on Aer Lingus. That was horrendous.
True, yeah. It's just that it's an interesting discussion. So let's see here. Final point. Okay, here from Aaron. He says, loved the last episode as always. Just wanted to add a few thoughts on the potential flights to Yerevan you mentioned, because we spoke about the most unserved route. So he said, I visited Armenia 2 years ago and learned a couple of things. First, you are absolutely right about the size of the Armenian diaspora. About 70% of Armenians live outside Armenia. Wow. Yet somehow still managed to have a stronger connection to the country than many people born in their own neighborhoods. In the Los Angeles area,
I like that.
Yeah. In the Los Angeles area alone, there are about 180,000 Armenians, and Glendale is basically little Armenia with better weather. So there's even a joke in Armenia. Ask a kid what they want to be when they grow up, and they'll say move to LA. So yes, from a demand perspective, an LAX to a Yerevan flight isn't far-fetched. And if any US airline likes quirky long-haul experiments these days, it's probably United, though LAX isn't exactly their natural playground. As for current connectivity, Lufthansa is essentially the only carrier that realistically bridges LAX to Yerevan. They operate an A321 from Frankfurt to Yerevan, and it connects smoothly to the US, including the West Coast. Regarding Turkish Airlines, and I know that we were incorrect about this, He says, I'm a bit skeptical about the scenario you mentioned. The longstanding geopolitical tension between Turkey and Armenia isn't exactly subtle. And love is definitely not a word anyone would use to describe their relationship.
Yeah.
Until recently, Turkey even blocked over flights. So
yes. We forgot that last week. Yeah.
So the point is
when
that
when we came off air and I listened back to it, I thought, hold on, they had actually, well, we were saying, we were speaking kind of in an ideal way, that would probably be the easier way rather than going via the Gulf, right?
Yeah.
But we did not consider their own geopolitical spat that the two nations had.
Yeah, and Turkish, in fact, does not even fly to Yerevan. But the irony here is that I flew from Yerevan to Istanbul, but you can only do so on Pegasus, the low-cost Turkish airline, which is not exactly connecting people to the US. So there you go. That's a correction on our part. And on that note, we thank you guys for joining us today in this episode. Great, fruitful discussion as always, Alex.
Yes, it was good to kind of just update us to where we are with this. And this is not a story in relation to Air India that's going to go away anytime soon. We wanted to get to it as it has been in all of the headlines and provide some context. And of course, as the developments continue to unfold, you can hear them here during our discussions every Wednesday on the episode. Dan, it's been a pleasure.
It has, and we will see you all next week on air. Bye-bye.
See you later.
If you're an RIA, Schwab Advisor Services is the Watson to your homes. Smart, dependable, always has your back. With all the wealth services, technology, and support your firm needs, the difference is so obvious, it's Schwabvious. Follow the clues at schwabvious.com.